What's up, everybody? This is Johnny, and welcome to Freethinker Radio. I'm here with my good buddies, Micah and Derek.
What's up, guys?
How are you guys doing?
Doing good, Johnny. Doing good. Glad to see y'all. Glad to be here. Thankful for KPFT. I think the weather's getting better here in Houston. It was a beautiful day.
It's raining in Mexico right now.
Yeah, it's raining where I'm at. I'm excited about that.
We got a ton of stories for you guys.
Let's before we dive in, I just want to remind everybody that we do have a new logo at KPFT. For those who aren't aware, we do this every Friday at 3 p.m. on 90.1 KPFT Houston. Of course, we've been doing this on KPFT, at least on the HD side. I found an old archive since 2016. And Johnny, you've probably been with us for about 2 years now. So we've been doing this for a while. We're here every Friday, 3 p.m. on kpft.org. You can find more about other shows. You can also find more about our show and our history at thehoustonfreethinkers.com. If you want to find out more about where we come from and why we do this and all that good stuff. But we got so much news to cover, as Johnny said, but we also got some events to hit up. So, Micah, I know you got one. You want to start us off? There's some markets, and Johnny's got some things happening. There's all kinds of stuff going on.
Lots of people selling stuff.
Lots of good stuff happening in Houston, you know. Now that we got past Freeze Fest, yes, there's the market, and we often talk about the, you know, value of supporting markets and such. There's market tomorrow morning, kicks off around 8 a.m. Live music from vocalist, guitarist of Devil Killing Moth, Daniel Alvieto. Probably been hearing him here on this station and elsewhere. Going to have all kinds of, you know, what do you call it? Good foods. And coffee and stuff, 1245 Heights Boulevard, and from 8 till noon. I guess that's about a mile north off of I-10. Pretty easy to get to. And something to get into early in the morning, you know, around lunch. All kinds of things going on. I see you got the site up for people that are plugged in there. Thank you, everyone. And what else we got going on, Johnny? I know you've got a few things to talk about in that day.
Down at... Midtown Bar and Grill, we're going to be having a Freedom Cell meeting. So if you're in Houston and you want to get involved with gardening or finding like-minded people who are interested in, working together on different projects, feel free to come out. It's at 1 p.m. The food's pretty good. And I really like that place.
I'm excited about that, man. Even though I'm not there in Houston, I just want to like pause for a quick moment and say like that's really cool to see. You know, Johnny, we've been hosting Houston Freedom Cells meetings for 4-something years plus. Yeah. And now all that stuff has just taken a life of it on its own all around the world. But even in Houston, I see lots of people communicating on Telegram and other places, organizing. I know they got seed swaps coming up. I know there's some protests coming up in a couple of weeks. And just this week is the meeting. So if you're interested in any of the above, that would be a good time to plug in. And you said 1 p.m. at Midtown, right?
Yes, sir. 1 p.m. at Midtown Bar and Grill. That's off West Gray.
From there, they can go to House of Jay, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Afterwards, we're going to be going to House of Jay. And my good buddy, Jeffrey, is going to be cooking up a giant curry for everyone. So if you want to come out, we would also love, you know, you can just hop over to the Garden Day if you're not feeling the meeting. That's at 323 Hutchison Street. Or you can just type in the House of Jay on Google and you should be able to find it. Or on DuckDuckGo, I should rather say it.
There we go.
But yeah, it's going to be cool. And I don't know. You got anything else coming up, Micah?
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. That evening at Red Dwarf over on McGowan, over by HCC or the old HCC over there, just south of downtown. Ganesha, along with Dad's mom, that should be pretty good. I went to a Ganesha show about a month ago and with Jeremy Carswell, and that was good. So
I think I'm going
to
be there.
Always happy to see Dad's mom versus Satan, stuff like that going on. So that's some pretty intense, I guess. I don't even know how to label that music, but if you can type Dad's mom, you can find it, listen to it, and label it yourself if you want to.
Oh, yeah. I forgot there is another event, if you can believe it. I think all these events are just coming back up. You know, Texas just opened up. So everyone's like, you know, finally we can like come out of our shells, I guess. But at the Easy 7 Skate Park, I got to shout out my friend Kevin Fegans. He's throwing a show over there, I believe. And that's got like Fusca. And a lot of up-and-comers. I think Critical Condition is playing. I don't have the list in front of me. I know it's a banging lineup. And obviously, that's a cool skate park that's always supporting the locals. But, that's all awesome. I got for events.
Awesome. When's that?
That starts at 1 p.m. and I think it's going like all day. So easy seven pretty much all day.
That's cool. What's up.
All right. Well, let's continue, guys. If you're listening again, this is Freethinker Radio. We are based in Houston, but we have an audience all around the world. And we like to highlight these events because whether or not we can attend them or we're involved in them, everything we just went through, there's markets, there's shows, there's community, there's organizing, there's gardens. These are the kinds of things that we want to promote. And even if you're listening, and you're like, well, this isn't relevant to me. I'm not in Houston. Maybe you should find the people who are doing those things in your community if you're not the one doing them, because we need more of this happening everywhere. But let's go ahead, Michael. Let's jump into some local news. I know we got some Houston and some Texas stories. Are we about to get a new police chief? Is that what's happening? And should I be happy?
I wonder if he's going to have our numbers.
Yep. This new police chief, that he's been around for a while, I thought it was interesting because it's kind of, you know, one thing everyone says about it is it's real abrupt. Like, what's going on? Like, you know, why is Acevedo ducking out? Questions abound. But yeah, it turns out that leaders of the HPDs will be jumping ship for a new crew in Miami, Florida. Kind of a smaller place, right? Today, the city's mayor and telecom's 5G champion, Turner, declared that Executive Assistant Chief Troy Finner will be assuming the helm at HPDs, a massive force of 3,500 members on April 5th. Finner joined the HPDs in 1990. He said his priority as chief will be to reduce the number of homicides and other violent crimes, as well as building trust with the community. But what else can or should he really say? He is coming in after 40 plus years in Houston. Times have changed through this, but they have not changed that much. HPDs used to be so rough that they were infamous nationwide and perhaps still are in the ongoing wake of the Tuttle and Nicholson Nicholas Ray and their dog Star murders. So I think that's kind of interesting. I think a lot of people would approve. You know, what do you think, guys, about this whole, let's just pursue violent crimes? But also, what do you think about that idea that there's really nothing else he can say?
I mean, anytime somebody new steps up, you always hope they do something good, right? I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Why not give the guy a chance to do something good is how I feel about it.
Yeah, I definitely feel that way as well. I want to know more about him, of course, because like if he's a career cop, then clearly he's made some decisions. He's been involved in some things, and maybe those are good things. Maybe they're bad things. It would be good to know more about that, you know. And I did see that I saw the mayor in his press release. He said basically that this new guy, Finner, is planning to use technology and data-driven policy to, you know, crack down on crime. And I'm like, when I hear that, I'm like, what do they mean by technology? Does that mean more digital surveillance? Does that mean, sting? Like, what exactly does it mean? So I'm curious if I'm planning on doing a little more research in the departments that this officer worked in and like what exactly he was involved, because that could maybe give us some indicators to the way he plans to police. So we'll keep you guys up to date on that. And I saw that, I don't know if you said this, Micah, that I think it actually, he comes into office or into his position April 5th. So still a couple more weeks with Acevedo, yep, if you want to say goodbye. The other one that I want to bring up that's related to Texas, and this one specifically to Houston, but I think it will affect people around the state, is this article from the Texas Observer. Now, I wasn't in the city a couple of weeks ago. We were talking about all the, you know, the freak winter storm and just everything that was happening. But this investigation by the Texas Observer says industrial facilities released millions of pounds of illegal pollution during the winter storm. And many of them won't face any consequences for the excess emissions that they pumped into the air, they say, endangering the lives of communities downwind. So just a little bit from here. When the lights went off during the winter storm last month in Galena Park, a city of 10,000 people on the east side of Houston, an eerie orange glow emanated from across the bayou that borders its southern edge as the refineries that line up the ship channel lit up the night sky. Chemical plants and refineries, which hadn't shut down in preparation for the brutal cold of the February 15th storm and the massive power outages it triggered, burned off thousands of pounds of dangerous and unprocessed chemicals as they rushed to shut down during the emergency. Over the course of this week-long winter storm, industrial plants across the state, not just Houston, but across the state, emitted more than 3 million excess pounds of pollution, according to an independent analysis by the Environmental Defense Fund, Airlines Houston, and Environment Texas. And so essentially what it's saying is that because these companies maybe it's going to pass, you know, it's going to cost us so much money if we shut things down and just burn off these chemicals and prepare for this. So let's kind of ride out the storm. And then maybe when things got a little bit too, like, you know, it was clear like things were going to go bad, they start burning off all these off this waste of, you know, emissions. And again, we already know that people who live in those communities are already facing lots of, there's high rates of cancers in Houston's East End and Galena Park and stuff like that. So just, you know, more for that community, which historically tends to be poor people of all colors, black, brown, white, just kind of lower income people who live in those neighborhoods and work those jobs and are exposed to those dangerous chemicals. So unfortunately, more of the same. All right, let's keep going. You're listening to Freethinker Radio. We've been covering local news. We're going to continue to cover some local news. We'll be talking more in just a bit about the latest on immunity passports. I mean, I don't know how many times we can scream about them, but they're here. There's no denying it's here now. We're going to get into that. But first, let's talk about robocalls in Texas, Micah. What is this story all about?
No doubt. Robocalls in Texas. That was pretty interesting getting into that about the emissions, Derek. I appreciate you bringing that one to the show for sure. If I could just scroll, I'd be better off. Sorry, my technologically hiccup right there. Yeah, it turns out that two Texas telemarketers got hit with FCC's largest fine ever. So, you know, it's kind of a alphabet soup first, you know. Robocalls have been on the rise in recent years, in case you didn't notice. An estimated 45.9 billion robocalls were made in 2020 alone. That is a 50% increase. Yeah, that's a lot. That's a 50% increase from 2017. Just think about the power and all the to make it ring all the time. And that's per a USA Today report. In the largest fine ever issued by the bureaucracy, the Federal Communications Commission has fined two Texas telemarketers $225 million for making these two telemarketers approximately 1 billion robocalls in under 5 months in 2019. So if they've been able to keep going, they probably would have got out 2 billion themselves. And, you know, that's pretty intense. I don't know. How y'all feel about that? Don't you think that maybe that'd be nice if it was a way we could just outpace robocalls? Or do you think, I mean, what do you think about the bureaucracy, the government jumping in there and saving us from these billions of robocalls blowing up our phones?
I mean, it's kind of
confusing, to be honest. Like, this is a sector of reality I've not thought much about.
Yeah, well, it's interesting to me because you would want, I think, like you're kind of hinting at, Micah, there to be a better solution that doesn't involve just taxpayers paying out. Because this is, of course, coming, like, they're going to maybe issue a fine here and this company's going to have to hold. But it's still like this is being done under taxpayers and the government, like you said. Like, maybe there has to be some kind of bottom-up solution to opt out of this, right? But these robocalls things have been going on. People who, even in the age of cell phones, right, you get like weird texts sometimes or phone calls, and you're like, I don't remember giving this number out. But I think this is really, it's like this conversation, a bigger conversation about information flow and how much information we're putting out there, right? Because you also get spam emails. It's kind of the equivalent of robocalls, but in a different way. So one form or another, we're giving out our information, and these telemarketers, these businesses, these scam artists are getting our info. And that's, I think, kind of should be a reality check for some people. The fact that they can make this many calls per year or whatever the parameters were is just indicative that none of us have any real security of our numbers, our emails, or whatever.
That's really some interesting additions there, Derek. And I'm always thankful and want to mention, you know, we are on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I'm always proud to be here Friday in the 3 o'clock hour. What do you think we're going to get into next?
Well, I got this one, man. This one, I mean, again, I know we talked about this a little beforehand, and the kind of easy answer is like, yeah, it's the media lying again, of course, right? Like, it's just another day. Who's surprised? But I think that this is important to acknowledge because it's just one of many examples and that have come out showing how much the media, and particularly the mainstream media, I'm not talking about for our KPFT audience, I'm not talking about, you know, the things you hear about on NPR and other places that say, hey, there's all this right-wing propaganda, QAnon, disinformation. Like, yes, that stuff exists as well. But the reason that a lot of those people in that kind of sector I just mentioned, a lot of Trump supporters, don't trust mainstream media, I think that they're rightful and correct in questioning, you know, why we should trust mainstream media. But some of the reasons are because of stories like this. This is coming from The Hill. Washington Post adds lengthy correction to report on Trump call with Georgia elections investigator. And just a little bit of background, you guys might remember during the kind of after the election and the battle of was there election fraud or whatever, one of the big stories that the Post broke in early in January saying, hey, President Trump called the Georgia's election investigator and was telling them to, quote, find the fraud, and said that they would be, quote, a national hero if they did so. And here we are 2 months later, and just past Thursday, the Post adds a 129-word correction to the top of the story saying, quote, 2 months after publication of the story, the Georgia Secretary of State released an audio recording of President Donald Trump's December phone call. The recording revealed that the Post misquoted, not lied, misquoted. I mean, but it's kind of hard to see how they misquoted because they just made something up. Misquoted Trump's comments on the call based on an information provided by a source. So again, some unnamed source. And yes, journalism relies on a sources, and we can't always reveal those sources. That's kind of standard practice. But when it comes to the mainstream, it's often, especially during this whole Russiagate and in the election thing, all this stuff, it's like, oh, an inside source or a government source or a military insider or whatever claims this. And how many times did those stories get turned out to be false? You don't have to be a Trump supporter to see that there was clearly, for one reason or another, an effort to come up with these different stories and to make them fit even when the facts didn't hold up. And so the Washington Post continued, Trump did not tell, like, this is them straight up admitting, Trump did not tell the investigator to find the fraud or say she would be a national hero if she did so. That's it. That's their whole story. Gone. Over. That's exactly what they claimed. And now they're saying it didn't even happen. Instead, Trump urged the investigator to scrutinize the ballots in Fulton County, Georgia, asserting that she would find dishonesty there. He also told her that she had the most important job in the country right now. And that was it. And so this headline in the text have been corrected to remove quotes misattributed to Trump. And this came days after the Wall Street Journal says that they actually got the audio. So once the Journal got the audio, they started reporting on it, the Wall Street Journal. And the Washington Post comes out and says, whoops, never mind. You know, we were wrong about that. But I don't know. Again, I know we could just
dismiss it. It's a rare time for them to actually come out and put something like that out. You know, we always talk about how they never admit it. So you might as well put it up there.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I feel like is, it's worth noting that they at least did acknowledge it. Yeah, Micah.
I think it's interesting this because if we take it in a way and we look at it in a way with that big old massive flow of information we were talking about earlier, it being just a little bit in there, we focus in on this bit, right, that you're talking about, this story. But in this bit, we can see how people and how news and how nations may have been manipulated, could be manipulated by a simple 129 word change. And I think that's important. I all the different personalities, et cetera, but let's take that universal that we can pull out of here. What was it when the American people don't know what to believe anymore, you know, then our misinformation campaign will be completed. This is one of the methods whereby it can be done. I'm not saying it was in this instance, but when we see this instance, we know that that's sort of how it could be done with a simple 129 words.
That's crazy, dude.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, like, think about it. We've got a few more important stories to cover here on Freethinker Radio, but this one is worth acknowledging. Like, really, especially let's imagine that, you know, I'm going to go out on a limb. Maybe there's some KPFT listeners. Maybe there's some of our listeners on Freethinker Radio, different places, who did believe this story and said, oh, you know, they went around and they shared it on social media and they told their friends, look, Trump's at it too again. He's threatening the, you know, Georgia investigator. Oh my God, this is why he needs to. I mean, that was probably, I guarantee you, this kind of story was probably quoted during the impeachment hearings against Trump. And obviously I'm not saying this is a Trump supporter, but that's, like you said, Micah, like those stories, they get reported. And if there is an acknowledgement, it's usually a quiet acknowledgement. Yes, the Hill's reporting on this, but how many of the other people, other than the people who are listening to Freethinker Radio right now, how many of the other people who repeated those stories, shared them on social media, are going to go back now and recant to their friends, to their family or whatever, or even just in their mind and say, oh, wait, that never happened. That never actually happened. I need to, you know, kind of remove that from my memory, because otherwise you got people going forward who are going to keep repeating this false history. Right. And then it's scary stuff, man. I really do think that, like, the quote you were saying, Micah, is from, it's been attributed to William Colby, former director of the CIA. You said that we'll know our mission is our disinformation campaign is complete when they can't tell fact from fiction. And I think we're really at that point where it's just like, again, people are rightfully skeptical of the mainstream media, not just because, oh, they're crazy, you know, anti-science, whatever, COVID deniers, because the media keeps lying. You know, we got babies in incubators in Iraq. We got lies.
You can't tell facts from fiction, and then they openly, like, you know, some mainstream articles, like, what was it, Forbes, telling people not to think critically. You know, so it's like on top of already not really, they're like, you know what, just give up.
Yeah, that
just
I don't know.
Stop trying so hard, man. Like, why are you thinking so hard?
I don't know.
Now, think about this one. Think about this one for a moment. Well, we've seen this study about social media platforms picking and choosing what's in your feed, right? So think about who might be shared X or Y article. It doesn't have to be this bit of the data, but the particular one with the 129 wrong words, you know, whether it's this or some other future one. And think about what that can manipulate in people's emotions and how they deal with life, what they think is real across millions of people as they broadcast this. It's tremendous power.
It is tremendous power. And that's why we try to use the power wisely, right? With power and responsibility. We get to broadcast on the radio and try to offer a counter. And again, I've said it before. I have no problem reiterating that. I guarantee you, if you're listening to radio in Houston, this is the only show that's going to be telling you these stories and bringing you the things, especially the stuff we're about to cover as we move into our COVID section. So I just want to reiterate that, like, there's other great programs on KPFT as well. And I'm hoping any of the people who are on KPFT, maybe who shared that story about the Georgia situation, might hear what we're saying and say, hey, you know what? I didn't, that was false. I need to go back and tell my audience now and be responsible and let them know, guys, that story wasn't true. We can still hate Trump for other reasons, but that wasn't true or whatever, you know, because it's important for us.
Fair enough. Yeah.
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 All right. Totally. Let's dive in. I just want to hit a couple headlines. And I know, Johnny, you got one. This is sort of like a little COVID section that is just piling up on all the other stuff we've been saying for the last year. And it's also the last one that I'm going to talk about, the PCR test, is just another example of how the media can lead people to believe one thing or the other, and they can do so by telling you lies or just by saying, you know what, we're not going to talk about that. We're not going to report on that topic because we don't want to. So let's start off with this one. Woman dies 40 minutes after receiving Sinovac COVID-19 vaccine. The Sinovac is the one that's made by China. And that's the name, Sinovac is the name of the company. And so China has, this is maybe like a bigger story for another day, but definitely it seems like China is one of the first world nations that is trying to use these kind of age-old colonial tactics of getting in so-called third world nations or developing nations like Mexico and using money, using health, using, you know, loans and all kinds of things. And in this case, they're basically promising them like, hey, we're going to get you the COVID vaccine. But so it kind of worries me about the bigger implications of the Chinese government getting involved in Mexico. But for the moment, let's just talk about this. A 75-year-old woman in Mexico passed away 40 minutes after getting the vaccine last Thursday. She received a dose of the COVID vaccine made by the Chinese company Sinovac. Health officials said preliminary results of the autopsy, of course, did not indicate any connection between her death and the vaccine. This is a 75-year-old woman in Hidalgo, Mexico, died minutes after receiving the COVID vaccine. But again, health officials say there's no connection. Several newspapers in Mexico reported at the time that she died 15 minutes after getting the vaccine. The federal health minister, however, indicate that she died 40 minutes after the vaccine, according to the latest reports. And Mexico's deputy health minister, Hugo López-Gatell, says there are no indication that there's a connection between her death. No evidence of that, her death and the vaccine. Instead, they said she died of a heart failure and chronic heart disease, maybe triggered by a reaction to the vaccine. No connection, according to them.
One thing, Derek, I know that in a lot of places in the world, and I think in the U.S. in most places, they don't pronounce a person dead until they go to the hospital. So, you see what I'm saying? That could account for some of that gap in time. Like, if you just passed out next to us and you had no heartbeat, we'd be like, he died just the 15 minutes after it, you know? But then the official story comes out that it wasn't until the hospital actually, the ambulance got you there. So I think that might help account for that. I don't know. I haven't done the research.
Is it bad for me that I really don't care if it was 15 minutes or 40 minutes?
I don't either.
Like
I don't either,
but I mean, because it for seems her sake, like
I mean, it's not. It's like
I think. Yeah, I think it's another one of those bits of information that can be manipulated.
Yeah, for sure. No, I think. And I mean, obviously,
people start arguing about that.
In the sense of like accuracy, it's important, right? But I mean, like, I guess what I was getting at, and not trying to make light of the situation, because this isn't the first vaccine. Let's just say this: this isn't the first death we've seen reported within hours or days, and this one's minutes, after a vaccine. Now, I know everybody's going to say, hey, you have no evidence these things are connected. And maybe at the moment we don't. But I'm just saying, there's definitely more than a handful of stories very similar to this.
Can we just all agree? Like, I think there's so many people are just sitting around pretending like it's not suspicious.
Yeah. I mean,
like,
but I think,
I mean, if I was investigating what happened to her, you know, I'd be like, I mean, it could have been like, I mean, and that's all anyone is saying, but like, you know, yeah, it's like you said, these things don't get followed up on properly and it's hard to usually tell.
Each human system is so unique, like our DNA and everything. And I know, you know, this may or may not affect it as different stories are out there, and I'm not medically adept enough to understand all of them, but you know, we got different things in our heritage, to say the least. We don't even have to go there. That, you know, some people aren't even allergic to poison ivy. Some people can't eat tomatoes. You see what I'm saying? And so when you got all these rushed through vaccines, what can this lady do, Derek, or her family? Do they have any recourse? Let's say it were, you know, the vaccine, you know, and it was conclusively proven, or it's proven in some other cases. Do any of these, do they have any recourse? I don't think they do. And so that's kind of scary. So that tells you, one, they got this blanket to protect them. And two, we know it's rushed through. So with all these particularities to each human being, not just in terms of taste, but also in terms of what their body can and cannot accept, I think it's kind of reckless.
It is reckless. And you're right, Micah. These companies have, particularly in the COVID vaccine, but since the 1986 Vaccine Injury Act in the first place, the vaccine manufacturers have been indemnified against liability, which means that if you are injured, whether that's like, hey, I got a headache for a couple hours, or death, you cannot get compensation. You cannot file. This is the only industry. If you were ever driving a vehicle and, you know, that was a faulty vehicle, you better bet there'd be class action lawsuits and things like that. There have been class action lawsuits for those kind of things. Not the case for the vaccines. And one point I want to make before we move to the immunity passports, Johnny, you said like about like, you know, them not covering these stories. And yeah, it's, they don't get covered because I just don't think people really, really understand the influence. I mean, I know that I've just learned in the last couple of years, like the real powerful influence that Big Pharma has on the media. Like, it's not just that they have influence on government policy, but there's the Gates Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation. I mean, they fund so much of media. And then I'll just show you this real quickly. This is something from last year that I covered. I did a video on this. That it just shows you the attitude that these people have. This is from some blog, the American Council on Science and Health, that describes itself as promoting science and debunking junk since 1978. So you know you're in good hands already. But like the intro to this kind of tells you everything you need to know. It says, a very disturbing paper in The Lancet proposes that vaccines can have unexpected side effects. Oh my God, it's like people have been saying that. Some of these are good, such as protecting against unrelated diseases, they claim, while some are bad, such as increasing all-cause mortality, which means that overall death increased. This is highly useful and potentially life-saving information that must not be hijacked by anti-vaxxers. So you see what I'm saying? Their mentality is that even if something negative does come about vaccines, like, hey, maybe some people have died, let's just acknowledge that, the media and these corporations are frankly, like, they don't want to even just give us a little bit. Like, if they even acknowledge, okay, hey, maybe some people did die from the vaccine, that it's going to feed into the quote unquote anti-vaxxer narrative. So that guy literally was like, don't let the anti-vaxxers see this study. I mean, it's just sick, because obviously if that's the science, shouldn't we go where the science is and say, well, shoot, if this can save lives, let's see what we can do about it. But instead it's like, hey, make sure the anti-vaxxers don't see this.
It seems like it's more about keeping up the appearances at that point of whatever it is. And we've seen this in what's been taken for science throughout the ages before, you know, remember the world was flat, or is, or I don't know, one or the other, whatever they say.
All right, let's jump forward. You're listening to Freethinker Radio.
I got one to music.
Well, not yet. We're getting to the music. I got one more to cover. And Johnny, yours, these kind of tie together. This is just, I mean, of all the places you would expect, it would probably be Walmart. But Walmart has now announced that they're going to be one of the first major retailers to allow the what's called the common pass, which is a type of immunity passport. This was reported first by the New York Times, and it says people who get their COVID shots at Walmart's and Sam's Club may soon be able to verify their vaccine status at airports, schools, and other locations using a health passport app on their phones. And this is, again, what we've been telling you is coming for quite a while. And the company joins a push by other major health centers and tech companies such as Microsoft, Oracle, Salesforce, Mayo Clinic, and on and on and on. The participation of Walmart, which is offering vaccines at the stores, is likely to accelerate the adoption of digital vaccination credentials. And when you look at it, you can see the kind of phone, and it looks like a common pass. It tells you your name, your date, your birth date. It tells you which vaccine you got, when you got your first and your second dose. It has a QR code for people to scan. And so this is One of the passports is called the Common Pass. Of course, JetBlue and Lufthansa airlines are already saying they're going to use those. The Health Pass is being developed by Clear, the people who already do the biometric scanning at the airports. And the Commons Project, which is behind the Common Pass, is once again funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the Rockefeller Foundation. So that's what's going on in the U.S. and Walmart. So Johnny, tell us a little bit about what's happening in Israel, because I know that they're a little bit ahead of us already.
Yeah, Israel has been promoting and touting how they've vaccinated half of their country, except for any of the Palestinians. If you want to go that way, I'm not saying that they should necessarily be jumping to take this thing, but, you know, I just had to get that dig in. I'm sorry. Anyway, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu cabinet voted this week to open shopping malls and museums to the public, subject to social distancing rules and mandatory masking. For the first time in many months, gyms, cultural and sports events, hotels, and swimming pools will also reopen, but only for some people. Can you guess who's not allowed? Under a new green badge system that functions as both a carrot and a stick, the government is making leisure activities accessible only to people who are fully vaccinated or recovered starting Sunday. 2 weeks later, restaurants, event halls, and conferences will be allowed to operate under those rules. Customers and attendees will have to carry a certificate or a verification with a QR code. So Israel is one of the first countries grappling in real time with a host of legal, moral, and ethical questions. It tries to balance the steps during resuming public life with sensitive issues such as public safety, discrimination, free choice, and privacy. And the article is actually, I would kind of actually recommend reading this. Go to archive.org so you're not giving them your traffic. But I would recommend looking into this article because there's a lot of crazy stuff in here where they're talking about like those morals and ethics about having this pass. Because really in America, everyone's like worried about, okay, well, you have this code. You might scan it to go on a plane, you know, but you already have to give your ID on a plane and like, you know, obviously all that stuff. So I'm just saying like, this is going to create a system where they're going to be able to see everywhere you're going, even like the grocery store. You're going to need this card. And essentially, if you have a problem with the vaccine for whatever reason, they're just going to leave you out. And this article is just talking about how happy they basically are to do that. And they're framing it in just like the strangest altruistic way, in my opinion. Here's another
human
quote.
Capital, the great reset. You see, it's that human capital information about you. And now you will be part of the Internet of Things. You're just a thing.
Yeah, listen to this. It says employers cannot force employees to get vaccinated, but they might be allowed to employ only vaccinated workers if not doing so could harm their business. So essentially, it's just like, what does that sentence even mean? And like, I mean, it's like you can't tell people that they have to get vaccinated, but you're allowed to only hire vaccinated people.
You ain't got to get vaccinated, but you either got to get vaccinated or get out of here.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just crazy. There's people here who are saying like they don't trust the vaccine and they don't want to, you know, go along with this. But they're saying like, you know, like what am I going to have to do like to, you know, go this? Like they're talking about, well, giving up concerts is fine and all, but you know,
you don't have a right to go to a concert, Johnny. You don't have a right to go to a sports game.
Well, they say you don't have the right to put other people at risk. And it's just crazy at this point, especially at this point in the pandemic, that we're pushing these vaccines that have never really been intended to stop transmission, in my opinion, like from the wording of their own intentions, like, you know, their own
putting other people at risk because they go there.
Yeah.
Because they choose to go there.
Because their vaccine works.
I do want to add to that, Johnny, that, you know, one of the things I will say that I have seen in some corners of the quote unquote mainstream world, like some of these concerns being acknowledged, like they're definitely not coming out like real blatant saying like, hey, people are pretty terrified by the implications of giving basically a digital badge to people to say you can enter and exit, whatever. But they are kind of acknowledging there are some ethical concerns. This could create a two-tiered society where only the vaccinated get to do this. And who's the vaccinated? Well, the wealthy people, you know, so they're sort of like framing it in that social justice kind of way of like, this is going to affect the poor people because It's even worse than that
because it's not they're giving it away.
Well, it also
they're like the vaccine's not necessarily like who even knows if the richest people are even taking it.
Yeah, I doubt they are.
That's what I'm trying to say. So that's like
that's the way that they keep framing it. Even on the local level, this is the way they keep framing it. The mayor and the judge and whoever keep saying, well, you know, we got all the deliveries of vaccine, and you know what? We checked the area codes or the zip codes, and it's only the white rich neighborhoods. Why aren't the black and brown? You know, so it's like they're really pushing that. So I think that's kind of the way that they're going to frame the ethical concerns. Not overall that, hey, this affects everybody's liberty, but hey, like this could affect brown and black people and poor people the most, which is a concern. But it still misses the point. But you know,
America is not going to do it like Israel's doing it, in my opinion. You know, Netanyahu is a guy who can just like do. You know, whatever, in my opinion.
Oh, they're going to sell a lot of Walmart.
And so, yeah, America's going to make it like way more, quote unquote, you know, voluntary to do it. Like, you know, I mean, it's going to be like some business. It's going to be a lot more of a slow process, in my opinion, in America to get to that level. It's going to start with travel, and they're going to really do that whole, you know, boiling frog thing where they're just like slowly turn the water up on you and say like, well, you know, what if we had it at Starbucks or if we had it at, you know, I mean, and I don't know.
Might be faster than you expect too.
It's coming. It's coming, but I don't know. Like, my prediction is like that something like that wouldn't be rolled out in America for a while. I don't know.
Oh, I give it to you to the end of the summer, dude. I give you to the end of the summer because they're already.
Until it's in stores though. I know.
Can't fly for sure.
I'm talking about stores. Like, till I'm trying to go get some bread, but I can't because I haven't been.
We're not.
Like, that's what's about to happen in Israel pretty soon here. Like, that's what they're doing. They're like putting in like, you want to go bowling? Well, you got to get this vaccine. You know, you want to like, you know, I don't know.
So you're telling me in the Israel, the Holy Land over there, that it's getting to the point where they can't buy or sell without this mark?
Well, that's the thing. It's not just Israel. Johnny's mentioning Israel, but just a month ago, the UK foreign minister was saying they're talking about the same thing for the market. So if the UK is talking about like, hey, this thing's going to be used in the markets, it might not be by the end of this year, you need to use it to get into Kroger or HEB. But absolutely, like with just last week, Joe Biden promised by Independence Day, July 4th, we're going to be independent of COVID. And in order for that to happen, two things have to happen. First, they're saying they got to vaccinate all the kids because that's the key to herd immunity they're claiming.
That's terrible.
It is, and they're starting the trials. But then the other thing is, in order for life to quote unquote go back to normal, they have to have the immunity passports rolled out because right now it's just like a little, it's like a form that you can get. And I do know that there's already a black market for those forms that people are using. And so unfortunately, it's going to push towards, well, this is why we need digital. I mean, I'm not saying people shouldn't do what they need to do, but it's definitely going to be used as an excuse for why. I mean, they're already rolling them out, as this article just said. I'm going to wrap up one more COVID story, though, and maybe we can jump into a song real quick. This one is just something I think we've all talked about over the last however many months. This is one that I'm looking forward to being back in Houston and asking the mayor and Dr. David Peirce about in our ongoing conversation. This is from the Lancet Medical Journal, published February 17th, so just about a month ago, and it's titled Clarifying the Evidence on SARS-CoV-2 Antigen Rapid Tests and Public Health Responses. And what it's focused on is that you have the rapid antigen test, which is one type of test, and then you also have the RT-PCR technology, which is sometimes referred to as a test, but it's more of like a method. But it stands for Quantitative Reverse Transcription Polymerase Chain Reaction Technology, or simply PCR, right? And PCR is constantly being promoted as the gold standard, including by Houston health officials. In fact, even in this Lancet article, it mentions that. But here's the key section. Let's just read this one part. I really will hope, encourage everybody to look up this Lancet study. You could also visit theconsciousresistance.com to see this report. Here's from the article itself. However, for public health measures, another approach is needed. Testing to help slow the spread of SARS-CoV-2, aka COVID-19, asks not whether someone has RNA in their nose from an earlier infection, but whether they are infectious today. And here we go. It is a net loss to the health, social, and economic well-being of communities if post-infectious individuals, and you notice that this is the way scientists speak. They're not going to say people who aren't, you know, who aren't infected. They're saying post-infectious. So they're saying it's a loss to the community of post-infectious individuals. They test positive and they have to isolate for 10 days. And here's the big one. In our view, current PCR testing is therefore not the appropriate gold standard for testing SARS-CoV-2. And it goes on even further. Let me see if right here it says that this suggests that 50 to 70% of the time an individual is PCR positive, they are likely to be post-infectious. Guys, do you understand? They're saying that half to three-fourths of the time that people have been tested with the PCR method, which is the test that then tells you whether or not you can fly or tells you whether or not you need to isolate or you need to quarantine or whatever, that 50 to 75% of those times people were post-infectious, which means they were not at risk of getting anybody sick, and they might have been sick at some time in the past, but not. I mean, that's just... And that's the Lancet Medical Journal, mainstream journal, not QAnon sites, not conspiracy sites. But is any of the mainstream reporting on this? I haven't heard a single story in the last month acknowledging this. I haven't seen the mayor.
Seems like it would be a pretty big story, wouldn't it? If you found out that maybe half to a third of people were not infectious, and what do we?
You would think that would be the last year. That would be the headline, right? But instead, it's like, hey, let's lie about Trump making phone calls in Georgia and let's ignore this, right?
Fake news. Fake news.
Yeah, but
I'm just kidding. I don't know, man. I mean, like, the PCR thing drove me crazy because, like, yeah.
If you're in Houston and you see the mayor, ask him about this. I mean, anybody, not just you guys, but I'm just saying to our audience, like, if you're in Houston and you are at an event and you see the mayor, you see Dr. David Peirce, ask him about it.
I wish we could still go to city council. I don't even know if that's really still going.
I mean, if you're curious about it, you might as well, right?
By now.
You're within your rights to ask him. I mean, it's just something you could do. You know, you could be like, hey, Sly.
Make sure you practice that question first. It's got to be.
Well, and also I want to say we've played recordings here on this show, here on KPFT, where I've asked Dr. David Peirce, and he privately acknowledges these concerns, saying, yeah, like the cycle threshold might be too high. It could be, you know, this and that. But the policies haven't changed. None of
Does it have to do with the, like, so how is that, like, for some reason I was just, like, thinking about this. Like, it's also that action is, like, kind of wrapped up in the same thinking as, like, the vaccine hesitancy argument, because it's like, we don't want them to have any kind of information that might be detrimental to how they view this. Like, he obviously knows that the threshold is a little bit too high and that it's probably causing that, but he's basically lying for his truth by saying, like, oh, well, on the side of caution, you know, might as well force people. But meanwhile, like, people aren't paying attention to the suicide rates. People aren't paying attention to, like, what that 10 to 14 days alone can do, or, like, literally how afraid some people are of, like, just getting it, getting their family sick. It could screw you up for 10 days if you're a certain type of mental state already, you know? And, like, I don't know, man. It's just, yeah. Apparently that guy thinks that that's worth it if he's going to privately admit that and then not talk about it later.
Yeah. I don't know. But I mean, you're right, Johnny, that one thing it seems like they're kind of getting away easy with is because there's no city council in person. I think they're still doing Zoom calls, but that doesn't have the same effect, right? Like, people in person calling them out.
Yeah, you got to watch them walk away while you're talking to them.
Hey, check it out, yo. So a test with 50 to 75% wrong, wouldn't that kind of, like, sensationalize this a little bit more too? Because we'd be saying this 50 to 75% more people were infectious. Like, making it, I mean, it could definitely in rhetoric be used that way, you know. Like, think about it. If we have this many people proven as their host, host infectious?
Post-infectious. Yeah, they're post-infectious, which means that if they were ever sick or ever had this thing in their body, it's been gone beyond the little incubation period.
Yeah. So they're all good. They're kind of immune now, right? I guess that's the thing, is they're like, well, they could still spread it, I think the headline would still be, like, this many people are, you know, are infectious with COVID.
Yeah. The thing is, like, I mean, I know people, even like my partner's mom, like, she had to stay home from work because some people got sick. Now, again, did they get sick or did they just get a positive COVID test? Either way, the result is the same. You got to go home. You can't work for 10 days. You can't work for 2 weeks, whatever, you know, and a lot of those people, they're not getting paid for their time off work. So again, real world, like you said, Johnny, not talking about the suicide.
It's so weird though, because I usually go home when I'm sick anyways. I mean, it's just.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what I mean? Like, it's just this extra, like, thing where they're not.
If you're not sick, you have to go home too.
They don't care about the suicides. They don't care about the rise of domestic violence. They don't care about, you know, for all the talk of social justice and whatever, they don't care whenever, like, some single person that lives check to check can't work because they got a test that is 50 to 75% of the time wrong.
Do they care about music and economics?
That's true. I didn't even think about that aspect. Yeah, you could, if that's like a missing an entire check.
Yeah. Micah, should we, you want to save the song for the end or what? I did want to debut, I'll just mention at least in case, you know, I know we're down to the last 12 minutes here and I at least wanted to mention one thing about the border and then toss it to you, Micah, for the economy. But our friends at SoBelow, you can find them on Facebook. I think their website is SoBelowMusic.com. They just released a new music video yesterday for their song Life's Change. And it's pretty cool. I wanted to play some of the song here on the radio, but I know we got a couple more stories. Maybe we can at least segue out of it with it. Or maybe we could play a quick minute. What do you guys think?
Why can't we just play
it? Let's put it at the end. Let's put it at the end.
Okay, we'll play
it. Just play it.
Okay, fine. 5 minutes. 5 minutes is a big chunk of our time to play this.
We love the music. Well, it's a weird
Derek.
As much as I like SoBelow. All right.
We got two more stories.
Let's move on. Okay. I got one real quick. We're going to continue. You guys are listening to Freethinker Radio. We're always a little wild here trying to figure out how to bring you guys the best underground music and uncensored news as we're doing here. Because I guarantee you some of the things we're talking about, you don't hear about elsewhere. Like this. Although this is in the mainstream, this might not be putting out to you in front of a KPFT audience. Biden administration limits what Border Patrol can share with media about the migrant surge at the border. And this is another big story that deserves probably a whole show on itself. But as happened in the Trump administration, there's a surge of people coming to the border who believe now that Biden is elected that they can, you know, they'll be allowed to just enter the country freely. And this is, of course, something that the right wing has used against Biden, that, oh, he's going to just let everybody in. And, you know, to their dismay, I guess, Biden actually said, stay home, don't come, stay to your towns. And so maybe some of the people who support him, who thought he was going to be open borders, are now getting surprised. In addition to that, Biden has placed restrictions on border patrol agents about what they can say to the media. And despite that, some videos of the border surge are being released because, of course, there's on the ground independent reporters. But some officials told NBC that they see this unofficial gag order, this unofficial order as a gag order, and these officials requested anonymity because they're not authorized to speak to the media about the topic, obviously. But yeah, I just wanted to throw that one out there. And then just another reminder, just headline, last month it was reported that Bill Gates and another Silicon Valley billionaire, Andreessen Horowitz, are using the U.S.-Mexico border to test new surveillance technology as part of the fight against immigration, so illegal immigration.
No cameras unless you're Bill Gates down at the border.
Well, he's not press, right, Derek?
You know, he just
controls. Well, he actually owns the press.
Yeah, he just owns them.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I just wanted to put that out there because, again, I know there's a lot of context, different sides of that border conversation, but that's at least something you should hear.
Bill Gates doesn't own this radio station, though.
No, he doesn't.
We're Bill Gates free here on KPFT.
Good to know. Good to know. Actually, corporate free as well, right? So even though, even if you hear the other programs, and you know, we don't want to name any other stations in Houston, but the others can't say that. Let's just say that. Yes. All right, I got some economic stuff pulled up for you, Micah.
That is interesting. That whole drone thing going on and everything. Yeah, I'm just kind of getting into. I just wanted to shoot through these quickly, and this is from the Economic Freedom Foundation, whatever. The latest legislation funnels $350 billion out of this stimulus bill, and you know they're talking about where all this money goes, and you know even in the beginning of COVID here on this show, all of us were talking about you know the economic woes, the you know, the preceding bailouts that were already starting in October, you know, the ability to use COVID as a cover to print and spend. So we've been talking about that for the whole time, but it turns out that there's more of the same in this new bill. The latest legislation funnels $350 billion in unneeded taxpayer money to flush the coffers of state and local governments. And, you know, we bring this up a number of times. In a way, this is taxation without representation. It's going to all these states to bail them out. The states, you know, we've talked about how all these different states were bankrupt, et cetera, couldn't afford pension plans, et cetera. Nonetheless, they're going to get $350 billion just to help bail them out. That's not even COVID relief stuff. Slipped into the bill's 600 plus pages are numerous smaller allocations of millions in taxpayer money. Carve outs for items such as racial justice programs for farmers and politicians' pet projects, like $1.5 million for a bridge in New York that that guy, Senate Minority Leader, who's been hanging around that town for a long time, Chuck Schumer, wants. So I don't know. I know all these politicians are going to put their pork in it, but at the same time, we knew, you know, only so much of that money was really going to COVID relief. I've seen some other articles that, like that Politico a fact one on their website. They do have that it's like 9% is going to actual COVID relief, which they were terming in terms of making vaccines available, stuff like that.
Yeah, 8.5%. So not even like a full nine. And yeah. Like you said, Micah, this isn't anything new. It's just like, hey, more par for the course. We just file this in case you thought Biden was going to be any different. And you'll find this article, because I know I wrote an article probably 3 months back, whenever the last quote unquote, it's not even right to really refer to these bills as stimulus bills, because that's not even accurate. That's even another media lie, right? Because if only 8.5% of the bill even has anything to do with COVID, it's definitely not a COVID stimulus bill. But the Trump administration did the exact same thing last year. So, you know, partisan.
And they say most of the money won't even be spent till 2022 also. So, you know, it's a good amount of spending, though, a good amount of printing, a good amount of debt. Expect things to go up in cost. You know how things cost when you have to build them, like guns, Joe. I mean, seriously, things that go up in cost as the dollar gets watered down. Are we surprised that it turns out that Americans, they are arguing, spend their some of their stimuluses on guns? I thought that was interesting coming out from Forbes. And as I read through it, it turned out that they said there's been spikes. A lot of stores have seen 20% spikes, and it names a bunch of stores and what they saw. They said it's hard to attribute the rise in gun sales to the stimulus. No, people just, you know, all of a sudden got some more money and pressure's on. They're talking about coming and stabbing them in the arm with a needle of a push-through vaccine. I don't know. People are, you know, capital riots, all that sort of stuff. I think there's a lot of reasons, you know, lockdown. We're not going to come to your house if it's burglarized. You know, they got a lot of reasons this last year to be spiking up Yale gun sales. But, you know, as they print the money, guns aren't going to go down in cost, you know, or availability. I mean, they're going to go down in availability possibly, but not in cost.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a trend that we've seen going on for a couple of years now, huh, Micah, as far as the gun. It's like every time something weird happens in the U.S., like, oh, gun sales spike. You know, it's like maybe it's just a America. U.S. reaction. Yeah, exactly.
Americans.
Well,
no toilet paper. Get the guns.
We don't have any. We want to make sure we don't run out of toilet paper or guns. Food, who cares? We'll survive. No, you're listening to Freethinker Radio, guys. We're here for the last couple minutes. We are going to end with a song. I know Johnny had one to mention about this human battery.
Yeah, I got a quick one for you, man.
I want to hear about that, and I'm going to throw one your way as well. So we'll hit two real quick, and then we'll wrap up with a song. This one is just worth reading from Erin Brockovich. You know her name. You've seen the movie about her. She's got a new opinion piece just published yesterday on The Guardian. Plummeting sperm counts, shrinking penises. Toxic chemicals threaten humanity. And just the short version is that there's a new book by Shauna Swan, an environmental and reproductive epidemiologist, at Mount Sinai in New York, which found that sperm counts have dropped almost 60% since 1973. And according to her, if we follow on this trajectory, that could mean that sperm counts globally could reach zero by 2045. And she goes into talking about how this is all related to the PFAS, which are sometimes known as forever chemicals that you find in cleaning products, soaps, shampoos, electronics, carpet, waterproof clothes, fragrances, food wrapping, plastic. All those chemicals that we've been imbibing indirectly and then putting into the water supply through our pee, et cetera, are apparently
making your wiener small.
They're making your wiener small, and they're getting rid of your sperm. So good luck out there.
Yeah.
That's a hard story to follow.
Let's talk about
it. Without sperm and a small peenie, you could still be a battery.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah. So this one just like tripped me out. You know, a lot of people are saying like, oh, Bill Gates is going to, you know, chip you and like all that. Like, well, your phone's already your chip. It's like, this is my thing that I've been thinking about for a while. Is like, what happens when you become your phone or something like that? So this is maybe one step towards that. You're going to not become your phone, but you're going to become your phone charger. So scientists just figured out how to turn your body into a battery. A tiny new gadget could turn your body's electricity into a battery, meaning pacemakers, drug delivery pumps, and other implantable medical devices could run on a new kind of renewable energy. You. I'm sorry. That kind of cracked.
This is like the Matrix already.
Yeah, that's what I was basically going to say. Like that line just makes me feel very Matrix. The wearable, which is called the thermoelectric generator, directly turns your body's heat into electrical energy. It was made at the University of Colorado Boulder. and they've tested it out on a ring. It could hypothetically be like also like a watch or maybe even a full sleeve. And this thing could be like sucking in solar power from the outside too. But so you kind of get the idea. You can read the article if you want, but I want to just say this end quote. I had it highlighted, but I got it now.
Could we use this to be superheroes?
So it says, in the future, we want to be able to power your wearable electronics without having to include a battery. I'm going to butcher this name, Jiang Lang Zhao, an associate professor of mechanical engineering at Colorado Boulder, said in a prepared statement, whenever you use a battery, you're depleting the battery and will eventually need to replace it. The nice thing about our thermoelectric device is that you can wear it and it provides you with constant power. It's just like, oh my God.
Wow. So yeah.
You're going to turn into a phone, man. It's just going to be like this little earpiece or like some goggles or something. Like, I guarantee it in the next 10, 15 years, there's going to be some weird stuff. You're going to be your own battery.
Those last two stories were both movies that have been predictive programming. Children of Men, if you remember that movie, said that the human population would stop because men become all infertile and there's no more children. And then, of course, The Matrix, you know, they turn the human being into a battery. There we go. We're out of time, guys. We're going to jump to some music. Get the heck out of here. Thank you guys for listening. Freethinker Radio. Thanks for being here. Peace. This is So Below. Brand new song. Peace. Sound. Looking deep inside, going find